Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the RightStream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RightStream and hashtag RightStream. Thanks for listening to the RightStream Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to RightStream Tuesday. This is your host, Daria Ann. I am an independent author, blogger, and founder of the RightStream Radio Network, which you can find out more about at our blog, rightstreamradio.com, or at blogtalkradio.com/rightstream. And today I am just so excited to have author Joe Perrone Jr. as my guest. Joe is really a prolific author of both fiction and nonfiction. He used to be a sports writer, and he's got just a really interesting background, a multifaceted career. So I'm really excited to bring him on the show today. And we're going to delve into not only Joe's books and his career, but also his thoughts on social media, how indie authors can succeed, and some really exciting projects that he's got in the works. We had an opportunity to chat here before going live, and I'm just really excited about all the things we're going to talk about today. I want everybody to know, too, before we get started, if you have questions, and we do welcome them, please call into the show at 347-945-7246. Again, that number is 347-945-7246. We love to get callers. We welcome your questions and comments. We're here, really, and Joe and I talked about this before going live. You know, one of my reasons for doing this show is to really help not just showcase talented authors, which I love to do, but also to help other aspiring authors and people who may have a lot of questions about how to get started and the writing and editing process and designing book covers and all the things that go into producing a quality book. It's not just about having a good story and being able to write it. There's so many other things that go into it. And, you know, part of my goal with RightStream, certainly with RightStream Tuesday and really the entire network, is to just share useful information that's going to help people in all of their pursuits. And obviously in this case, it's writing, editing, using social media and other marketing tools and marketing practices to really get out there and connect with your readers, build those relationships, and ultimately sell books. So that's what we're all about here on RightStream Tuesday. And I'm going to go ahead and read, I want to read from Joe's bio on his blog, and you can find his blog at joetheauthor.wordpress.com. And this is Joe in his own words. Married for over 32 years with two children and two stepchildren, I am a former sports writer and professional fly fishing guide, and I write the Matt Davis Mystery Series, currently 4 books. I love fly fishing, movies, cooking and eating, and music. My mystery series is set in the real town of Roscoe, New York, in the Catskill Mountains, where I guided for 10 years. I've also written a coming-of-age novel called Escaping Innocence, A Story of Awakening, set in the 60s. I have published 2 other nonfiction books as well, A Real Man's Guide to Divorce, First You Bend Over, and Gone Fishing with Kids, How to Take Your Kid Fishing and Still Be Friends. So I am really excited, and without further ado, I want to welcome author Joe Perrone Jr. to the program. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Daria.
Well, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me today. I certainly appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to our chat.
Yeah, me too. Well, gosh, Joe, we have so much to cover, but first, you know, I read your short bio on the blog. Is there anything else you want to let people know about you before we get to talking about your career and all the books that you've written and all the things that you do?
Well, gosh, let me see. That's a tough one. I recently started a publishing consulting company, nothing fancy. It's not even incorporated. I explored that possibility, and when I found out how much red tape was involved, I decided to just pick the name and use the name as basically sole proprietor. It's called Escarpment Press, and the name for the company came from my wife, in a sense. We live in the mountains of western North Carolina, and when we first moved here, when we were driving down, we were on, I think it was I-40, which runs east to west, And we started up the mountains, and my wife said, you know, this is the escarpment. And I, quite honestly, I confess I had never heard the word before. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, it's kind of where the land abruptly changes from the Piedmont or the flatland into the mountains, and it's called the escarpment. And so when I decided to form my company, I originally wanted Rising Tide because of my fishing background, but it was already taken. And then I thought of escarpment, and I said, yeah, why not? It gives the impression of rising to a higher level, and that's what my company is all about, helping other authors to rise to a higher level.
I love that. I don't think I've ever heard that phrase before either, Joe. What a great name for a company. And, you know, I commend you for doing that. I think one of the things I've learned as an independent author myself is that once you get into social media, you realize that there are so many people who want to help. And I just commend you for doing it, you know, for putting it together in such a formal way. One thing that writers need to understand is that while writing itself is a solitary activity, kind of out of necessity, when you take the time to network, whether it's social media, well, you know, with social media and other, you know, local efforts maybe in your area, you really can meet a lot of people who've been there, done that, and are willing to help. And it certainly sounds like in your case, you're even taking it a step further by forming a company. So that's awesome.
Well, thank you. You're absolutely right, because when I started, it was me who was doing all the learning and others who were doing the giving. And now I've had a chance to kind of turn it full circle and put myself in a position where I can give back. And, I do most of my work is for a fee, but it's a very reasonable fee. And oftentimes if I find myself in a situation dealing with someone who just doesn't have the means, I find some way to help them anyway. And that's been my good fortune to have the same thing happen to me, so it's just a way to pay back a little bit.
Yeah, and that's excellent. So, Joe, I want to step back a little bit, because you are an independently published author, correct? So you haven't gone the traditional route with all of your books. You've gone independent, correct?
I have, but I can tell you that I made a yeoman-like effort to be traditionally published for about 2 years. I banged my head against that glass ceiling for about probably better part of 2 years, and I have all of the rejection emails and letters to show for it, which I could probably paper a room with them. But at some point, you have to believe in yourself, and I did. I always have, and I just decided that I was getting older, and there was not that much time that I could afford to waste. Besides which, by doing a lot of research, I was starting to discover that the traditional way of publishing was not necessarily the best way for most people. It might work for established authors who have already made a name for themselves, branded themselves, so to speak. But for up-and-coming authors, it's almost almost a closed avenue to most authors, I believe. And I just wasn't going to be content to just say, well, I tried, and that's that. I had to take it a step further, and that's what I did.
Yeah, and that's been very true in my experience. And you know, I think it's awesome. And you know, Joe, we now have, I mean, with the blessings of modern technology, we don't have to wait anymore. I mean, in the old days, that was sort of the only avenue, you know, keep sending out queries and keep getting rejection letters and hope, you know, sometime before you passed on to the next life that you might get a literary agent and a contract. But now, because of social media and advancements in technology, we don't have to do that. And I think one of the biggest benefits for me anyway is that you can connect, you can find your audience, and you can connect directly to them without, you kind of eliminate that middleman. And the books, I mean, I want to talk about this too. I mean, and you can produce quality books that look just as good as anything you can find in a bookstore from a traditional publisher.
Oh, I totally agree. And in fact, in many cases, I find that the self-published books, they do a better job because it's much more important to them, first of all. It's more personal, and they're not willing to settle for mediocre. So they actually go the extra yard to make sure that their product will be head and shoulders above anything else. And I know for myself, I'm my own worst taskmaster because I refuse to accept mediocrity. I read and reread and re-edit and re-edit everything that I put out there, and even my blog. I mean, I probably put more into editing my blog than most people put into a book sometimes. I spend an awful lot of time before I'm willing to put it out there. I want to make sure it's the best it can possibly be.
Yeah, that is excellent. And I think it really speaks to, I guess, the rugged individualism that really made this country great, that we, you know, you have that and you have that discipline and you put out something of quality and then, you know, you hit the publish button and then you can put it out there and connect with your audience and your readers and really develop that personal relationship. I know people have found it odd. I mean, many people in my life who don't really use social media or they think it's just a waste of time, they truly don't understand the real relationship that you can develop. And in this case, you know, with your readership, and you can connect with people not only all over the country, but really all over the world. I mean, it's certainly been the case for me. I've had guests on this program from Germany and Canada and obviously the United States, but from all over. And, you know, I've made some real friendships with people that I've never met in person. And so for those who kind of, and especially for authors, don't dismiss the idea of social media. It's funny, Joe, and I want to ask you this. I just read an article by Kristen Lamb, who's, a very successful independent author, from Texas, and she had a blog post about social media and about how too many people, and again, I want to get your experience with this, too many authors seem to think there's like this direct correlation between social media and book sales, and she makes the point that it's really about that relationship building, and the book sales, yeah, eventually they come, but it's not an exact science where, okay, I'm going to write this many blog posts, and I'm going to sell this many books, or I'm going to go on this many internet radio shows, and after I'm on that show, I'm going to sell 50 books. It's about what you do every single day to connect with your readers. What do you think about that?
I totally agree. I attended a conference on self-publishing about 3 years ago, and the gal that conducted it was a pretty well-known author. Her name is Christine Kling, and she spent a lot of time talking about how not to use social media as well as how to use it. And one of the things she emphasized was if you have a blog, for instance, you don't want to be hammering people constantly about your books on your blog. In fact, I on my blog specifically, I don't even mention my books other than at the bottom of the blog. There are obviously, I'm going to have links to my books. I'm just a brief mention that I'm an author and I write the Matt Davis Mystery Series and with a couple of links. But as far as actually talking about anything about the books themselves, I talk about what I think would interest the average person, what might make them connect with me as a person. And it all goes back to the interpersonal relationship between reader and writer. And I write about, and I know you've read some of my blogs, I write about things like the state of baseball today versus what it was when I was growing up in the 50s. Or I recently wrote a column about a day that I spent on the river and how on the river fishing, I should specify that, and that the day was about a lot more than fishing. It was more about the friendship that I shared that particular day with this friend of mine. And on the way home, I was reciting a psalm from the Bible, and I'm not a big Bible person by any means, but I said, what am I doing? I was reciting the 23rd psalm, and I was like amazed. I don't know where it came from. And so I wrote a blog about that, and I got a lot of response to it. So I love it when I write something on my blog and it causes people to think or to identify. I try and write about universal things. So for me, my blog is not about my books or selling books, although tangentially it may sell books, but I really enjoy the connection with the readers.
And by the way, Joe, I tweeted out and put out on Facebook both of those blog posts because they certainly resonated with me. And, you know, just as an example of what you're talking about, I mean, I read, for example, the one about baseball. I read that blog post and I was like, oh, my God, my brother Mark's been harping about this for the last 10 years. I think it was when Johnny Callis had passed away. And my brothers and I used to have a blog together years ago, and he wrote a post, and I was reading yours, and it was almost like I was reading what Mark had said, about how the players are just so disconnected today from their fans, whereas back in when he was growing up, and he's my oldest brother too, so especially for him, it was like almost like he had this almost a personal relationship with baseball players. I mean, they were like real people, and not to go too far down that rabbit trail, but you know, that's a total example of something that I read that and I was just like, oh my God, I can connect to this. Had nothing to do with your book necessarily, but you know, I saw your books on there, and your one about the fly fishing. I mean, the Psalm 23, I read that this morning and I was like, wow, I'm like, Joe and I are kind of we're on similar spiritual paths here. And I tweeted that out, but I'm just putting that out there so that people understand that it's so true. It's not, you know, in fact, that seminar you said you went to, it's kind of like broadcasting versus engagement. And what you're doing is engaging with your readers and your audience and allowing them to get to know you and vice versa. And you don't know down the road when they're going to buy one or more of your books, which I do want to talk about eventually, by the way. But all of that to say that, Joe, yeah, I totally agree with everything that you're doing. It's so important.
Well, I'll tell you, I was a fly fishing guide for 10 years in the Catskills, and I would say I would rate myself as a guide maybe a B, and as a fly fisherman probably a B, B plus. But the thing that I enjoyed about guiding were the people. And very often I had a number of repeat customers because we established a rapport, and it was far less about fishing than it was about just communicating as people. A lot of times these were individuals that worked in high-stress jobs like in the law profession or in the stock market, and they desperately needed an outlet, something that could help them at least for a day on the river forget about all of that, and they just wanted to talk to somebody, and I was more than willing to accommodate them.
Kind of like a bartender, except doing something healthy.
Exactly.
That is awesome. Well, Joe, let's go back though for a little bit here, because I do want to talk about your books, because you've written several, and I really, since you brought up fishing, let's talk about your first book. Now, I noticed, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but when I was doing my research for the show, that your Gone Fishing with the Kids was published in 1997. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And this is like a guide, so tell us about it. Yeah.
Well, over the course of I've had a lot of different jobs in my life, more than I'm would like to talk about, but
another
quite
thing
honestly,
we have in common, Joe.
I was going to say that, and there's not enough time, but I mean, I've been a chauffeur of a limousine, I've been a taxi driver, I've been a substitute school teacher, I've been a surveyor, I've been a sports writer, a copywriter, a painter, a tree surgeon, and so forth and so on down the line. But the thing, I just lost my train of thought. You got to forgive me. I just turned 69, and the old brain isn't working as well as it used to. What was it that just started this train of thought?
Sure. Well, I mentioned your book, Gone Fishing with the Kids.
Oh, yes. Okay, there you go.
And it has a five-star, I want everybody to know, it's got a five-star review on Amazon as well. So.
Okay, now I remember. So what happened is through the years, when my two sons were very small, 3 and 7 years old, I was never taught how to fish by an adult. I learned how to fish as an adult. I didn't even fish as a little kid. And so I didn't know how to teach my children, and I tried to teach them as if they were adults. And anyone who's familiar with fishing for trout knows that it's very, very intricate and very, very delicate. Trout have small mouths. They eat small baits or flies and insects. So I had my poor kids trying to catch a trout with a tiny, tiny little hook that's probably no bigger than two question marks in a sentence. And of course, they just weren't up to that at that age. And as a result, it totally turned them off, and they don't fish. Neither of my sons fishes, and my stepson doesn't fish either. And so I owned a sporting goods store at one time for 5 years in a small town, and it was right alongside a commuter railroad into New York City. And at 5 o'clock in the evening, these fellows would get off the train, and they would come to my store, and they would say, My kid wants me to take him fishing tomorrow. I don't have any idea. Have you got a book or something like that? And, I mean, this went on for years. And finally one day I said to myself, I ought to write that book. So I had a friend who had published a couple of books about fishing that were specifically geared up to local reservoirs in the area, reservoirs where there was very little information about these particular places. And he wasn't the world's greatest writer, but he was certainly a terrific salesman and a go-getter. And I said to him, I said, what do you think about cooperating with me and let's write this book together? And I said, I have an outline for what I think it should be. If I give you certain chapters, would you be willing to give me the raw information, and I will convert it into my style? So I wrote the whole book in my voice, so to speak. And he put up the money for it. It cost us about $30,000, and we actually self-published 11,000 copies, I believe, is what the original run was. And we have sold over 10,000 of those copies. I probably have a couple of hundred in my basement, and he probably has a few in his basement. But we were very successful with it. And with the money that I earned from that, I actually bought my first computer. And the focus of the book was not so much technical, because you can get that information anywhere. It was more of a psychology of teaching children to fish. And I'll tell you what, I've had many, many people who had bought the book come to me or email me and say how much a difference it made in their relationship with their child. And that's really what it was all about. And that's why it says how to take your kid fishing and still be friends. And that was the main thrust. And I think that's the thing that got me really started on self-publishing.
Awesome. Now, Joe, I mean, it was 1997, so what were the self-publishing options back then? Because it seems to me there's probably a lot more now available.
As far as I knew at the time, there really weren't any other than what we did, which was we actually my co-author is a fellow named Manny Luffglass, and he's now probably self-published at least 10 books. Most of them have to do with fishing of one form or another. But we actually had to go to a small press, and we had to put up the money. And then Manny actually, he had a lot of contacts. He used to write a little fishing column, and he used to call on local retail stores. And because of that, we had a little bit of a built-in marketplace. And it was just through an awful lot of hard work, letter writing, phone calls. I personally got the book into L.L. Bean's store up in Maine. I got it into 50 Toys R Us stores in Florida, which I know is now your neck of the woods. And we got it into West Marine Catalog. And you know, there was an awful lot of work that went into it. It didn't just happen by happenstance. But because it was it was listed, of course, on Amazon once we published it. And that was it. That was all we knew. I didn't even design the cover myself. I wish I had a chance to redesign the cover, but it was done by someone else that we paid. So there was no, as far as I knew, there wasn't any Lulu, there wasn't any CreateSpace or Lightning Press or any of these things, Lightning Source. I don't think they existed at that time.
No, and now there are so many, and I want to keep talking about your books, but at some point during the interview, I definitely want to ask you about, for those who are just starting out, you know, what to look for before you select a self-publishing company, because now there are so many. I know that I'm pretty sure none of them existed in 97, and certainly we didn't have Twitter and Facebook back then either, but it sounds like, you know, again, they're just invaluable now. But it sounds like with the fishing book, though, you sort of had the built-in avenues for sales, and you guys really, you know, you put together a plan and you really worked it, and it succeeded.
We did. We worked very hard at it. And as I say, a lot of the credit has to go to Manny because he really had the outlets in place. We then enhanced that, of course, individually. We both worked at increasing our market. I had an agent. I have a friend from high school who is a fairly successful literary agent, lives in Connecticut, and he actually loved the book, and actually we asked him if he would be willing to try and see if he could find a legitimate publisher for us, and he took it to Hyperion, which, if you don't know, that's Disney. and they liked it. The only reason they didn't take on the project is they felt it was just too small of a project for them. They were looking for bigger fish to fry, no pun intended. And, you know, Manny was of the same mindset as me. Okay, they don't want it. We'll do it ourselves. And yep. And that's been my attitude ever since, pretty much.
I love it. Okay, and the other title, one of your other book titles that really kind of piqued my interest, Joe, was Escaping Innocence, A Story of Awakening, a loose memoir that morphed into a novel. So this also has a 5-star rating on Amazon. So tell us a little bit about this book.
That book is my baby. It's my favorite book. Not to say that I don't like all the books I've written, but that book happens to be very personal to me. During all of these different jobs that I held, I used to have a lot of time at the airports when I was driving a limousine. And at one point, back in 1987, I was working 3 different jobs. I was driving a limousine at night, trying to sell real estate, and also painting houses. But I had the most free time when I was writing, driving a limousine. So I started to just make some notes about experiences I had had as a cab driver, experiences from college and so forth. And I read a book by Larry McMurtry called All of My Friends Will Be Strangers. And in that book, and it's been a long time, it's what, 20... Oh, gosh, 27 years ago? Yeah, I believe so. Anyway, it was about an author who was apparently blocked and had made a pact with himself to write at least one paragraph a day. And that idea resonated with me, and I mentioned it to my wife. She promptly went out and bought me a half a dozen spiral notebooks, and I started to seriously write. And 3.5 years later, I had filled up the 6 spiral notebooks, both sides, and I had the makings of the rudimentary beginnings of a novel. And I realized early on that nobody would read my memoirs at that point because I wasn't known by anyone, so I decided to make it a novel. And that's what I did. And then I have since, over the last 15 years, probably rewritten it at least 3 times completely, to where now I'm very happy with it, and it's never going to change. But it's about coming of age in the 60s. It covers a span from junior high school through college. And most of the action takes place in the college years. And it's about a young man named David Justin who is, for lack of a better term, trying to become "quote unquote" a man in the strictest sense of the word, and it's his ongoing voyage of discovery, learning about the world, learning about himself, and it's in many places very, very funny, but and also in other places it's very, very poignant, and can actually it has brought readers and brought this writer to tears in certain places, so it's a very complex book. And it's hard to get people to buy it and hard to get them to read it, but the people that have read it, I think it's gotten 21 reviews on Amazon, and of the 21, I believe, at least 15 are 5-star, and it has nothing lower than a 3-star rating.
Fantastic. Yeah, I am definitely, I've got a really long to-be-read pile, and I'm so far behind on writing reviews, Joe, but I definitely, this is one book I definitely want to read, and you have an overall 5-star on Amazon, you know, with all those reviews, so congratulations on that, and it sounds almost, you know, when you were talking, it almost, I was thinking of the Wonder Years, you know, the old TV show.
Well, that's exactly, I've actually had readers who have emailed me and said that's what it reminded them of also. It's told through the eyes of this main character, and that's a very good analogy.
That was one of my favorite shows back in the day, too, so I just loved it. So now let's talk, oh, you know what, before we move on to your Matt Davis mystery series, I want to have you comment on your book, A Real Man's Guide to Divorce. First you bend over and then it's like dot, dot, dot. And before I let you jump in here, Joe, I just want to say that it's refreshing to see this topic from the point of view of a man. Let me just impose my commentary here. One of the things I really dislike about the current culture we're living in is sort of this prevalent idea that, you know, that all women are saintly and can do no wrong, and all men, I mean, if you look at the way they're portrayed in pop culture nowadays, they're either bumbling idiots or they're all evil. You know, we just don't have, like, a balanced view. There isn't a balanced portrayal of human beings, male or female, with all of their good and bad qualities, because we're all human and we all have them. It seems like men are kind of demonized these days. So I was happy to see a book about divorce from the man's point of view. So please tell us a little bit about that one.
I'll be happy to. Let me preface what I say by the fact that divorce, I don't care who you are, if you go through a divorce, it's always a little bit of each person's fault. Nobody's ever blameless, and I certainly was not blameless. I don't really even know. After it's been 33 years, and I still say to myself, you know, what was it precisely that caused me to get divorced? And I still can't tell my children why. My ex-wife and I, I'm happy to say, have become friends after all this time. That wasn't always the case, but for at least the last 3 or 4 years, we've spent the major holidays together at one or other of my son's homes. She and my wife get along very well now, which wasn't always the case. This past Christmas, we actually exchanged gifts, which is something that most people find totally unbelievable, but it's true. She's read my books. I've given her a copy of each of the books at Christmas time. And before I wrote this book, I got permission from both my children and my stepchildren. I have 2 stepchildren as well. I love all 4 of them equally. The book is dedicated to my children because it's they who suffer the most when there is a divorce, no question about it. They pay a very high price. And those of us who are conscientious spend the rest of our lives trying to do the best we can to repair the damage, which I'm pleased to say I think I've done a pretty good job of that. The book is not an attack on women by any stretch of the imagination. People that know me know I have a very caustic sense of humor. I can be pretty sarcastic at times. The book is pretty sarcastic, but I think the thrust of the book is to share some of the anecdotal experiences of my own experiences in the divorce process to warn others. Although it's targeted for men, I've had many women read it, and they said anything I wrote in there could easily apply to them just as well. It's a way to say, hey, look, this is a tough process. You're gonna get your knees and your elbows scratched and bruised, but you can come out of it a whole person, and these are some of the ways you can do that. You can avoid some of the mistakes that I made by following some of the advice. But overall, I would say it's really an indictment of the divorce process itself and the legal process. I don't want to offend anyone, but it was my experience personally that the lawyers involved make more trouble than they solve problems. And I think without the lawyers in the process, many people could go through a divorce with very little hard feelings on either party's parts. But unfortunately, that's not the way the system seems to work. It's better for the lawyers if they can make mountains out of molehills, which is what they tend to do. So this is just a way, you know, like I say, for me to share my experiences, give some insight, and just say, hey, it doesn't have to be so horrible. If you follow some of my advice, you can come out of this thing on the other side without being totally destroyed. And that's what it's all about.
Excellent. And again, that's also available on Joe's author page. If you go to Amazon.com and just look up Joe Perrone Jr., that's P as in, like, Paul, E-R-R-O-N-E. So Joe
Perrone.
Perrone. I'm so sorry.
My brother is – my. No, it's all right. My brother is Perrone. I have one sibling. We're 10 months apart. We're what they call Irish twins. And for 2 months every year, we're the same age. And but he has always pronounced our name Perrone, and I've always pronounced it Perrone. It's actually somewhere in the middle because it's technically in Italian. It would be Perrone, but to me it sounds a bit affected, so I just say Perrone.
Peroni. Okay, well, you can find Joe Peroni Jr. on Amazon.com. Just type in his name, and all of his books will be listed right there, and you can purchase everything through Amazon. So, Joe, let's move into your Matt Davis mystery series. Now, you currently have four books that are part of this series, but what was your inspiration to kind of move into the mystery genre?
Very simple. After spending almost 20 years writing, rewriting, editing, re-editing, rehashing my entire coming-of-age period of my own life, I was sick of it. And I said, I want to write something else. So I had always liked to read murder mysteries. So I sat down at my computer, and this is no lie, and the only thought I had in my head was, it was a dark and stormy night. And I truly, that is exactly the thought that I had in my head. So I wrote a scene of a man who is coming back from California to New York on I think it was a 747 at the time, who hates to fly, and he's just come back from a very successful business trip on the West Coast. He's a wrought iron furniture manufacturer. He's of Greek descent. And he's flying in this plane in the traditional white knuckle posture, and hanging on for dear life. And they hit this terrible thunderstorm, and the plane is being buffeted about, and the lights are blinking on and off, lightning crashing all around, and he's just terrified. And at the very time that he's praying that he will live, his wife is at home being systematically raped and strangled and praying that she will die. And I wrote this opening scene going back and forth from the two points of view, his being afraid that he won't live and his wife's just wishing to God that she could die and get this horrible experience over with. And when I finished the scene, I thought, wow, I had goosebumps running up and down my arms, and I said, yeah, this is it. And I took this and I printed it out on my printer, and I took it to my wife, who is my muse and my final edit and everything else, and she read it, and I'm waiting, and she said, handed it back to me, and I said, well, you know, what do you think? And she says, it's all right. And I was totally devastated, and I said, what do you mean it's all right? And she said, well, it's okay, but it's not grisly enough. It's not gory enough. And I said, oh. And you have to know me by my nature. I'm not a very, I don't know how to put this. I have a feminine side. I mean, I love to cook and things like that. And so violence doesn't really come naturally to me. So I took it back to my computer, and I sat back down, and I spent a few more hours. And I made it what I thought was just horrible. And I brought it back to her, and she looked at it, and she read it, and she said, yeah, now you got it. And so, okay, I had the opening scene, and then I didn't know where to go from there. I truly had no blueprint. I didn't have an outline or anything. And without getting into detail, I had an incident involving chat rooms at one time in my own life that was not the most positive experience. And my wife said to me, why don't you have your murderer meet his victims in a sex chat room? And I said, really? She said, yeah, I think that's a great idea. And so that was the germ. And then I just started writing. And literally, I know this sounds like very hokey, but it's the truth. It just went where it wanted to go. And I just hung on for dear life, and I just followed it, and it went. And the characters, the characters evolved, and then they had their own personalities, which dictated how they would respond to certain situations. And the book sort of wrote itself. And I really mean that.
Boy,
it was a heck of a ride. I'm sorry?
No, I said I totally understand that. And it's so great when that happens and you're just in that flow. You know, Wright's frame, you call it sort of the flow of creativity, but it just sort of, it just comes through you. It's a fabulous experience.
Well, it's, you know, people ask me, I mean, whenever I do any type of public speaking engagement or something, invariably there's somebody will ask me a question, you know, what is your method? What, how do you go about writing? And I tell them the truth. I said, in general, I have a germ of an idea that's either sparked from an article I read in the news, or maybe a true crime story that I read, or just an incident that happened in daily life. And I said, that's my germ. And I sit down and I start writing. And again, it tends to go where it wants to go. Do I give it some direction or a nudge in one way or the other? Sure. But by and large, the characters, their personalities, and the original germ kind of dictate where it wants to go. I can tell you specifically one book that where I can be quite specific how it evolved. Since I started writing murder mysteries, I've stopped reading them because I don't want to co-opt anyone else's ideas. And I really love reading murder mysteries, but I've stopped reading them. So what I read instead, I read a lot of nonfiction. And I was at the library one day, and they had the section in the library that has new nonfiction, and they've got a dozen or two books, you know, the latest publications. And I saw one. It was called Salvation on Sand Mountain, and it was about a journalist who was following a case of, this is true now, of a man in Alabama who was a Pentecostal preacher who handled snakes, poisonous snakes, as part of his practice, his religion. And this man, at one point, got drunk one night and forced his wife to stick her hands into a box of rattlesnakes. He put a gun to her head, and he accused her of cheating on him. She was bitten several times, and because she was so kowtowed by her husband, she wasn't going to call anybody. But she got so ill that she called a close friend and said, "You better call an ambulance. But tell them don't pull in the driveway because Glenn will get mad." The fellow's name is Glenn Summerford. This is a true story. And so the police came, and the ambulance came. They took her to the hospital, and the police got involved. And he is currently serving 99 years to life in a federal prison in Alabama. Right. So I read that book with great interest. And the journalist himself, in doing his research for the book, he actually became involved in the Pentecostal snake handling religious movement and actually handled snakes himself. And, I kind of forgot about the book for a week or two, and it kept surfacing in my mind. And one evening, really one early morning, 3 or 4 in the morning, I woke up and I had this idea for how I could write a murder mystery involving poisonous snakes. And so I wrote Twice Bitten, and that was the inspiration for it. And that book, I had almost had the full plot worked out in my whole mind when I woke up, and I wrote it down as an outline. And that's the only book I've written like that. But that had a definite inspiration from
a real life, a real actual crime. Yeah, wow. Now that one also has almost, it looks like a 5-star rating on Amazon. It looks like you've got 37 reviews on Twice Bitten. So, and that was released in March of 2012. So
that's correct.
And all of these, again, everybody, if you're listening and those who will listen in the archive, please go to Joe Perrone Jr. On Amazon.com, and you can find all of his books listed right here. And I love Amazon for that. Well, there's pros and cons to Amazon. I think it's mostly pros, but it's so many people are on there, and it's a great place to purchase books. So please do so. But Joe, do you design your own book covers?
I design all my own book covers. I do all of the layout of my books from beginning to end. The only thing that and I definitely want to acknowledge is that I have beta readers that I've met through the years on the internet who are of tremendous help. When I think I've got it about as good as I can get it, I send it out to them, and they look for any time continuation problems, storyline errors where something may not jibe with something that happened earlier in the book, and they have been just tremendous help to me, and now I find myself doing it for them. So again, it's, you know, what goes around comes around. When I'm able to help them, when they've got a problem, I'm able to do it too. But yes, I do pretty much everything myself. I do the ebook formatting. I do the print book formatting, and I enjoy it. I enjoy it almost as much as the writing itself.
Yeah, those are things. Well, I'm not a book cover designer, but I definitely learned how to do formatting myself after, again, learning from my experience and paying a lot of money to have somebody else do it. Realized, no, there's some things I can do myself, some things I need to send out. Just as like you're saying, too, that's another benefit of social media and networking with other authors and readers and editors is that you can find good people, beta readers, and good people, as in your case with your wife, to edit and really give constructive feedback. And it's just invaluable. And like you said, it all comes around because we can then give back by offering the same or maybe somebody needs help in another area. And that's why, again, networking is so important for readers because by nature it's a solitary activity. And like my friend Roy Griffith says, you know, you're the point of the spear, and it's what you do. It all comes down to what you do when you're alone. But you still have these people along either side of the spear that are behind you and helping you. And I just think that's such a great analogy. And it sounds like Joe, you're using that very well.
Well, I find that with each book I write, my acknowledgments section gets bigger and bigger.
That's awesome. Now, Matt Davis, like, can you tell us a little bit about this character, a little bit about him, just to pique people's interest, and hopefully they'll go on Amazon and get some of the books?
Sure. Matt Davis is not your typical hard-boiled cop, you know, gruff and irreverent. He's a reflection of me. I say that modestly. I mean, I don't mean it to be boasting or anything like that. Some people like me, some people don't like me. So, but basically, you know, the old adage is you write what you know, and I know me, and I know how I react to things. So I kind of imprint Matt with my personality traits to a large degree. He likes fly fishing, which, being that I've been fly fishing for over 40 years, that's no surprise. He likes chocolate. He's addicted to chocolate. Well, I'm a chocoholic to the point where I almost died from it at one point. But
oh,
that's
goodness.
A story for another day.
That's a serious chocoholic. Okay.
Oh, yeah, big time. I also like to use real people as characters in my books. I have probably four or five people that I know personally who have given me permission to use their persona, and I try to be as respectful of that as I can be. They're a true reflection of their personality, and they're repeating characters in the series. But Matt was started out as a New York City homicide detective, and in the first book, As the Twig Is Bent, which takes place in Manhattan, he's nearly killed. I don't want to give too much away, but he's nearly killed and decides to take early retirement. He was close to retirement age anyway. He's not a young guy. He's in his 50s now. And he had a friend who was on a part of the town council in Roscoe, New York. Now, Roscoe is a real town. It's called Trout Town, USA. And it was recently, a couple of years ago, also named as the ultimate trout destination, a fishing destination. And for that, it won an award, cash award, which the Chamber of Commerce has used to better the town itself. But I've been going to Roscoe for about 40 years, and I have a number of friends there. Many of them have died, unfortunately, through the years. But it's just a place that it feels like home to me. My heart is there. I have instructions for my ashes to be distributed over the Beaverkill River when I die someday in the distant future. And I thought, why not set this thing in Roscoe? So I had Matt take the job, fictitious job, of chief of police of Roscoe. It's a town of about 500 permanent residents. And so things that happen to him, they're not very often they're not grisly serial killers or anything like that. There are things that could possibly happen in a small town. And I usually have a secondary plot going on. In the most recent book, Broken Promises, there's a controversy in town involving wind turbines, big consortium is trying to bring wind turbines to the town. So while there's a murder that has to be solved, there's also life that goes on today, the normal life that in the life of a small town chief of police, parking tickets that need to be addressed and so forth and so on. So I try and make him a regular kind of a guy. He's not cocky. He's one of the people. He wants to be liked. He doesn't like to make enemies. And he's just the kind of a guy that you like to sit down and have a cup of hot chocolate with, or a coffee, whichever is your bent.
Now, it sounds great. So do you have plans to add to the series soon?
Oh, absolutely. I'm taking a break right now. I published the most recent one in August of last year, Broken Promises, and most recently it received an Indie Brag Medallion, which I'm very proud of. It's the second Indie Brag Medallion that I've won. The first one was for opening day, which was in 2012, I believe. But I wanted to give Matt a little rest, and I started a standalone thriller. It's entitled Getting Even, with an exclamation point, and it involves a soon-to-be-retired FBI special agent named Horace Whitaker. I had originally picked a different name, and when I researched the name, I found out that there actually was a serial killer by this particular name, so I didn't really feel comfortable using it, so I changed the name. But at any rate, it's kind of a chess match between this soon-to-be-retired FBI agent and a serial killer. And he's made it his mission to solve this crime before he's forced into retirement, because in the FBI, you're forced to retire at age 57. And I found this out by exhaustive research. I am working with both a current FBI agent and a retired FBI agent as my technical advisors, and I'm very excited about this project. I've been very busy with other things over the last few months, and I've had to put it aside, but as soon as September rolls around, I intend to dive right back into it. In fact, actually, I'm getting kind of antsy. I really want to get back on working on it. So that book will probably come out sometime in the middle of 2015, and I have a rough outline of the fifth Matt Davis mystery that I've already started on, and I will get to work on that as soon as I'm done with Getting Even.
Wow, sounds very exciting. It's very exciting, Joe. And
I'm tired already just thinking about it.
Well, no, this is awesome. And I encourage people to please go to Amazon.com and look up Joe Peroni Jr. Check out his book. I'm a huge advocate too, Joe. I love independent authors. I love the idea of self-publishing and giving voice and to all these talented people out there. I mean, it's been incredible over the last few years, especially just the amazing talent of people that are out there that would never be picked up by traditional publishing houses. And thanks to new technology, they don't have to worry about that anymore. So if I'm going to give somebody a gift, and I know they like mysteries, I'm going to give them one of your books, and I love the idea of supporting independent authors. And along those lines, I want to make sure we talk about this. You and I were discussing before we went live a workshop that you have coming up to help other aspiring authors. So please tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. For the last 5 years, I've been involved with the Blue Ridge Book Fest in Hendersonville, North Carolina. Technically, it's held at the Blue Ridge Community College, which I believe is in East Flat Rock, but it's probably only hundreds of yards away from the Hendersonville borderline, so we just say it's in Hendersonville. Everybody knows where it is. I've been a number of occasions, I've been an exhibitor with, each time I would publish a new book, I would exhibit with the book, but I've also been involved designing the program for the Book Fest. I did that for 2 years. This year, I was asked to do a seminar or a workshop on self-publishing, and I'm very excited about it. I've been working on it for months now, getting the track ready for it, and pretty much have it nailed down and ready to go with it. It will be held a week from this Friday, that's the 25th of April, at 3:30 at the Blue Ridge Community College. So anyone within an hour or so of the Greenville, Spartanburg area or Asheville area, please come on over. It's free, and there will be it's set for an hour and a half. The first hour or so I will be blabbing away, telling you everything I can, as much information, giving as much information as I can. And then the last 20 minutes or so, I hope we will have a very, very spirited question and answer session where people may have some questions that I didn't cover. So I'm very much looking forward to that. It gives me a chance to interact with other people, which I cherish. And then I will also be exhibiting later on with my book at a table and doing book signings too.
Sounds great. Now, Joe, will any of this be videoed or, you know,
not that I know of. I don't know that there are plans to do that as far as I know. I wish there were. Actually, it would have been a great idea. But oftentimes I find out that they've arranged to do things that I'm not aware of. So it's possible. But as far as I know, it's not in the works. The other thing I want to mention, if you don't mind, is that I've gotten involved in audiobooks as well. The technology has advanced dramatically. It used to be audiobooks started out as tapes. When you bought an audiobook, you got about probably half a dozen or more cassette tapes, which you put in your car's cassette player when you were traveling. Then they went to CDs, and now most of them are computer files that you can use through your iPod, iPad, on your computer. You can play them if you have Bluetooth in your car. You can play them while you're driving. And I have presently, let's see, one, two, I have four out now. Opening day, I had narrated, I was very fortunate, I have a tremendous narrator, Scott Pollock, who's a voice of NPR in Atlanta. He narrated opening day for me, and I'm actually going to meet him in person at this year's Book Fest because he's coming to meet someone else. I actually referred him to another friend of mine, and he's going to be doing their book, so they're going to meet, and I'm going to meet him in person for the first time. I also, Escaping Innocence is out, and I have a terrific narrator, Gary Kohler, who really and truly brought that book to life. And you can go on my website, and you can hear free samples of it, or you can go to audible.com and you can listen to a free sample of Escaping Innocence. I think you'll get a kick out of it. The other two are the divorce book is done, and that's out, and then also As the Twig is Bent is out. And currently I have Twice Bitten, which is the snake book. That's in production right now and should be out within the next 2 months, maybe a little bit sooner than that. And Gary Kohler is just getting ready to start on Broken Promises, my most recent Matt Davis. So within the next 3 months or so, all six of my all books will be out in audiobook.
Terrific. And Joe, is your website different from your author blog? And if it is, please give everyone the address so they can find you.
Yeah, my website is always a work in progress, but I even have a separate blog on my website where I mostly blog about my writing. And the address is very simple. It's www.joeperronejr.com, JoePerroneJr. .com. And I love to have people visit my website, and I've got a bunch of links on my pages which says email me, and boy, I wish you would, because I love to hear from people.
Excellent. Yeah, and guys, you can tell Joe's a very social kind of guy, so please do email him. Joe, you know what I was thinking, you know, with your upcoming seminar that you're going to be teaching, it almost sounds like something that you could develop as a webinar in the future if you wanted to, and be able to reach people everywhere. I mean, that was what popped into my head, you know, and that's why I asked about, is it going to be videoed? Because, again, with technology now, we're not limited anymore. I mean, I love doing in-person events as well, so I think that part of it is fabulous. But if you wanted to expand it, the technology is there that you could even develop webinars on this topic.
Well, actually, a good friend of mine suggested something similar to that, because, in fact, he was largely responsible for the Book Fest asking me to do this particular workshop. And he suggested that I take it on the road, so to speak, which I would love to do, and to go to different book festivals around, you know, within maybe 400 or 500 miles of where I live and do it in person. And I would love doing that. So one or the other sounds like certainly viable options. And the webinar, I hadn't even thought of it, but that is something that I might consider. Thank you for giving me the idea.
You're welcome. Well, you know, there's such a hunger out there, and I know from being involved in the CLFA group on Facebook, I just had an idea, and it's not even like I had asked for anybody's input. I just thought, you know, I want to do something different with my show. So on May 20th, I'm doing a panel where I'm bringing in, you know, people who've been very successful, like yourself, independent authors, who are going to talk about, you know, the title is going to be something like, okay, so you've written a book. Now what? And it's geared for independent authors, everything from how to get an ISBN number to selecting the right self-publishing company. And, you know, as soon as I put it into the group, okay, here's what I'm going to do, and does anybody want to be a panelist? I mean, it was incredible the amount of people that wrote and said, oh, my gosh, I'm so glad you're doing this. I really need help with this. I have no idea. I have no clue what to do. You know, I'm writing my first book or whatever it is, and I just feel like there's such a need for it out there that if you decided to do something like that, it would absolutely take off.
I think that's a great idea, and there, because there are a lot of pitfalls, and some of them can be expensive.
And
I've read some horror stories where people have, I mean, literally been bilked of a lot of money, and there's really no need other than if you want to hire someone, let's say, to design your cover, or maybe format your book for electronic publication if you're not, a particularly computer literate. That's something that, yes, okay, there's some legitimate expenses that a person can incur. But, boy, I'll tell you what, I mean, I've heard people spend $5,000 and $10,000, and then when it's not successful because there's been no support from the so-called publisher, they've then had to go and spend more money to buy back the rights to their own book so they can then self-publish it. So there are some terrible, terrible pitfalls that you know, I and you and others can help prospective self-published authors avoid. So I'll tell you what, I'm a big proponent of Google. I use Google for everything, and I have found say somebody says to me, oh, I'm going to use such and such. They want to publish my book. Well, first of all, nobody, quote unquote, wants to publish your book. They want your money to publish your book. And so I'll say, well, let me just check it out for you. And I just jump right on Google and I'll say, and the easiest way, if anybody's listening and you want to know, is just say, here's how you can pose your question. Complaints about company XYZ. Just put that right in there to Google, and immediately you will find if there have been any problems. And then, of course, you have to consider the source. It could be just a disgruntled writer who had no talent and his book didn't sell, and he knew what he was doing as far as his agreement with the company, but he didn't do what he needed to do on his end. But then you'll find some genuine horror stories. And so you can avoid a lot of problems by just doing a little bit of research, and Google is very helpful for that.
Absolutely. And, you know, research in general is just right at our fingertips now. That's another benefit of modern technology. You know, all you have to do is type, you know, and right at your own computer. And
are you familiar with editors and predators?
No. That sounds like something
well,
you need
see,
to
Well, see, when I very
with.
First, when I started way back in around 2005 with this, initially got involved with self-publishing, I found out all kinds of information. I don't know if it's spelled exactly the way the words are. I think there's a little bit of literary license taken with the spelling. But if I'm not mistaken, it's editors and predators. If you do a search, again, quote-unquote, here's Google, if you do a search for editors and predators, I'm pretty sure you can find a link to their website. And it is a terrific website that will certainly steer you clear of the bad ones, and it can also give you some positive direction in finding good people to work with. So it's an invaluable resource, and I used it early on, and now I just search directly. But it is a good one for people just getting started, so you might want to keep that in mind.
Yeah, thanks for the info, Joe. And I'll definitely, it's archived now, and I'm definitely going to mention that when we do our panel discussion as well. So, man, Joe, I can't believe it. This has been such a delightful interview. I can't tell you how much it's been so much fun having you on the show. I can't believe we're at the end here. But I want to just give you an opportunity to mention anything that we might not have had an opportunity to discuss and just let everybody know where they can find you again before we sign off for today.
Sure. On Twitter, I am Joe the – let's see. I got to remember now. I've got so many different names. Author Joe P. So it's at Author Joe P on Twitter. And my blog is joetheauthor.wordpress.com. And I love it when people read my blog, and I love it when they post comments or email me about it. So please do that. My website is www.joeperonijr.com. And on Amazon, if you just plug in Joe Peroni Jr., it'll get you to my author page on Amazon.
Fantastic. Well, Joe, I will definitely see you on Facebook and Twitter, and I just wish you so much continued success. Please keep me posted, too, on your workshop. I'd love to bring you back to maybe discuss that, too, so maybe we could get you back on here in the near future.
I would love that, Daria. Thank you very much for that.
That'd be awesome. Well, listen, you have a great day, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Okay, thank you so much, and thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
My pleasure. Me too.
Have a great day.
Take care. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was author Joe Peroni Jr. Please find him on all of his social media platforms. And keep in mind that next week I will be back here at 1 p.m. Eastern time to interview another author who's into fly fishing, Randy Kadish. He's another person I met. Gosh, that appearance on Hugh Hewitt really back in December kind of yielded so many wonderful new friendships with some really talented authors. And I was just so glad that I had the opportunity to do that. But Randy will be joining me next week at 1 p.m. Eastern time. The following week, I'm very excited, my good friend, blogger and internet radio host, Diane Student, she'll be guest hosting for me on April 29th. Now, that's going to be at a special time at 6 p.m. Eastern time to accommodate Diane's schedule, but she was kind enough to fill in for me, and she's going to be doing sort of a paranormal show with a Christian author. Whose name unfortunately escapes me right now, but we're going to be promoting that very soon here. But so on April 29th, Right Stream Tuesday will air at 6 p.m. Eastern time live with the wonderful host and writer and blogger Diane Student. So I know you guys will enjoy that, so please check that out. And as I said, on May 20th, I'm real excited to put this panel together, and we've got a bunch of great people participating, including Bane author Sarah Hoyt, Jack July, author of Amy Lynn, and some other great folks from the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance on Facebook, which, by the way, if you're interested, whether you're a reader or a writer, aspiring author, just somebody who just loves independent authors and is a liberty-minded person, then check out Conservative Libertarian Facebook, Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance on Facebook. I do that all the time. Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance on Facebook, hashtag CLFA on Twitter. You can find, if you're interested in RightStream again and checking out all of our great lineups of shows and hosts, visit rightstreamradio.com, and you'll find out more information about Lisa Tarvez, John D. Gresham, Sheena Benjamin-Wise, Dr. Billy Eisenberg, and all of our shows. We have Just Believe with Lisa Tarvez, Military Monday with John D. Gresham, of course, Right Stream Tuesday with Daria Ann, Family Power Hour, Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. with Dr. Billy and Sheena, and Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, our women's lifestyle show that's co-hosted by Lisa Tarvez and me. We've got plans to add a techie show. I know I keep saying this, but John assures me he's working on it, so stay tuned for that. Follow us at WriteStream on Twitter. That's W-R-I-T-E, stream. You can follow me at Daria Ann. That's D-A-R-I-A-A-N-N-E. My blog is dariadgiovanni.com. I finally got a new post up there yesterday, working on one to publish today. And again, just want to thank everyone for listening and for all of your support. And until I see you again next week, keep rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Have a great week, everyone.